Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson. Today, I'm bringing something a little bit different, ladies and gentlemen. It's called Tech Ocean. Now, Tech Ocean, an energy services provider, I guess, in oil and gas and renewables. The ASX code is T3K. That's ASX code is T3K. Joining me today is Brendan Brown. He's their chairman and non-executive director. Great to see you, Brendan. I love the ocean in the background there. Listen, this is the first time we've had a chat to my investor audience, so it'd be really good just a brief overview of who are Tech Ocean for us.
Yeah, look, Tech Ocean are a service company focused on providing marine and offshore services to the energy industries and also, more recently, decommissioning and rehabilitation and the environmental aspects of offshore Australia.
It's kind of a big market, but you've been going, I think, for 10 or 12 years, but you only listed in September of this year. Why the move to list? What's been going on in those 10 to 12 years? Were you profitable? Give us a little bit of background as to what was happening and why you chose to list now.
Well, the company was formed in 2008, and its only year of operating cash flow loss was 2008. We picked the right time. We launched in the GFC. Every year since then, we've been cash flow positive. And the reason why we decided to list the company was we could see a massive opportunity in terms of expansion and growth coming forward in terms of the decommissioning market. It's a $40 billion market offshore Australia, and in fact, a $100 billion market in Australia-Asia over the next 20 years. And the directors personally, the 12 founders, couldn't fund the amount of capital that we needed to address that huge market opportunity.
Well, that makes sense. This market opportunity, are there other players in it? First question. And also, is this decommissioning? So $40 billion is big, and you said $100 billion around Australia and Asia. That's not globally. That's just Australia, Asia. Is this a market that's suddenly come up? Has it always been there? I mean, or is there new legislation meaning that things need to be cleaned up a little bit more?
Yeah, it's a good question. The market potential has always been there, but it's been accelerated through a number of, accidents that have occurred in recent years. And what I mean by that is Laman area in Northwest Australia is now in the hands of the government to be decommissioned. There's also a project offshore New Zealand, which is in the hands of their government to be decommissioned. And so what's actually happened is we've seen regulatory inflation, if you like, whereby the governments are far more interested now in ensuring that operators and custodians of permits actually clean up as they go, and they're asking to decommission. Secondly, we're looking at, for instance, the Gippsland Basin has been in production for 50 years. It's entering the end of its natural life. And so those assets need to be decommissioned, and that's our backyard, and it's where we believe we have a strategic advantage.
Why do you have a strategic advantage in the Gippsland area?
Well, why we believe that is, one, we have great relationships with all of the major operators there. Secondly, we have port facilities located there. And thirdly, it's the tyranny of distance, which really creates a barrier to entry for other international operators coming into our backyard, because the mobilisation costs and so forth are sometimes prohibitive. So we can actually compete and extract an economic profit while still providing good service to our customers.
What is it that you've got? Is it a vessel and no one else has got a vessel? Just explain to us what it is you've got that allows this to happen.
Yeah, well, having just floated, we actually put the capital into repurposing our vessel to make it more multi-purpose to assist in decommissioning. So, for instance, we've got some particular modifications done to the vessel, including an our 60-tonne working crane that we might be able to expand to 120 tonnes where we can pull subsea things from the bottom of the ocean. We're also located logistically very close. So we operate out of Port of Geelong and also near Wilson's Promontory in Victoria, very close to all of the Bass Strait assets, which include the Otway Basin, the Bass Basin, Northern Tasmania, and also the Gippsland Basin, where there's another 21 platforms operated by ExxonMobil at the moment. So we're in a very, very good position in terms of we have a logistics base there and we have our engineering base there. And I guess the key value proposition is we also provide integrated services. So we don't just provide logistics. We provide an engineering solution. We provide onshore logistics. We provide offshore marine services, and we provide detailed design and commissioning services. And not one company does all of those things together. And so we're actually able to service our companies, I believe, our clients better than perhaps a handful of competitors.
Only a handful. One of the questions I wanted to ask is back in 2008, and you said I think there were 12 founders. Why did you decide to even begin this company? It sounds like it's a big market, and with big market comes big costs, I think.
Yes.
Where was the impetus to start the company in the first place?
Well, the impetus to start the company was really driven by the need of the clients, where they said, well, look, we're just not getting the service out of our current, platform support vessel operators or engineering companies. And the founders decided that, you know what, we've got the good relationships, we can do this. And so they started designing their own solutions, and they first had a boat that they leased called the Erebar, and they started actually servicing the major operator of the Gippsland Basin, ExxonMobil at the time. And we found that the relationship became a trusted relationship. And since then, we've been imminently involved in the first two major decommissioning projects in the Gippsland Basin, which no one else. And we were able to deliver particularly the first of those projects 2 years ahead of schedule and under budget compared to one of the major international operators. And so we're now on the books of all the major operators in Australia.
Tell us, let's talk a little bit about revenue pre-IPO, and then let's talk about what you're going to be doing with the funds, because it wasn't that long ago, September of this year. Mm-hmm. What's the revenue been like? Because you said that it was a bit of loss on year one, no surprise there. Mm-hmm. How have the revenues been going since then?
Yeah, overall, they've been volatile, but if you were to draw a straight line through them, we've grown from revenues of about $10 or $12 million a year up to about $30 million a year on average over the last 10 years. Now, people might say, oh, well, that's a small amount of growth. But when you're privately funded, you need to live off your own retained profits. That's part of the reason we spoke about for listing is we can now actually scale the business. Right. Now that we've got the customers and the work opportunity, we can put that capital to work, and we're seeing massive opportunities for expansion, both not only in decommissioning and rehabilitation, but also in the renewables area as well, where we were the first company to be appointed and currently the only Australian company that's supporting the Star of the South, which is the first offshore wind farm, which will be the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere, offshore Victoria.
So what's your role in this wind farm?
At the moment, we've been associated with installing what's called the LIDAR buoy system, which is a system to measure the resource, and it measures wave, current, wind, and so forth. And then we would expect naturally the relationship with the promoter of the project, which is one of the Danish Infrastructure Fund, to be assisting them in ongoing with the construction, development, and installation and maintenance down the track. And we've been approached by a number of other proponents of other offshore wind farms around Australia, including those that are floating rather than fixed to the ocean floor, to assist them. And they see Tech Ocean as being the the premier company to assist in this, I guess, energy transition that's likely to occur over the next 20 years.
So you're working doing the buoys, and is that using the vessel that you have, or is
yes.
that...
Yeah, it's okay. Using the vessel we have, and also we've leased vessels as well. And in fact, we've been involved in subleasing vessels, and that's part of our business model, is not to necessarily take on the full capital risk of a vessel. So we'll use a blend of, you know, leasing vessels, renting vessels, bare boat leasing with an option to buy, and also we've got our key core asset, which I guess its replacement value would be in the order of about $15 to $20 million now, and our balance sheet is our market cap.
Because that's what I was thinking, Brendan. Because you raised just over $6 million, and these vessels cost a lot of money. My question is, why didn't you raise more at the time of listing? Because this is a capital intensive business that you're in.
Well, I guess the first thing is that we've been profitable in the past, and we've been producing about $4 million of EBITDA, $3.5 million of EBITDA. And we believe that the right strategy is to raise enough to what you need. And then if you do a good job, you can always go back to the market later and ask for more money. The first thing is to continue to deliver on the business plan and the profits we've got. So, you know, we didn't want to dilute the existing shareholders too much. So we wanted to basically make sure we had enough capital to do what we wanted to do. And if we need to go back in 18 months, we'll go and ask for some more money then.
Well, that's fair enough. Well, let's talk about the money that you did raise. What are you using those shareholder funds for?
Okay. So the bulk of the funds that we've raised was to actually repurpose our core asset, the Tech Ocean Spirit, which is just it's actually just left Perth now, but it was in Singapore dry dock, where it went through its 5-year certification, and every vessel around the world has to go through a 5-year dry dock. They clean everything else, repaint it, replace everything, and so forth. We've then installed a new 60-ton working crane, and we've done a few other mods to the hull such that we can access subsea wellheads and so forth. And we've actually been able to pay for the bulk of our transition back to Australia by backhauling some subsea trees to a major client, in the Otway Basin. So we pulled into Henderson in Perth, loaded up there, and now we're on transit across the Great Australian Bight. We'll be dropping a subsea tree off in Perth, in Geelong, and then transiting down to the Bass Basin, where we're actually got just recently we've got a number of contracts, so we should be in some fairly intensive work for the next 2 or 3 months just in that basin alone. We're then due to come back to the mouth of Port Phillip Bay and install a new reef, which will support recreational fishing and create a habitat for fish. And then we've also got, we're looking forward to potentially a longer term lease contract with one of the major operators, which we've actually in the past have a 5-year lease with. And we may actually exchange boats. So depending on whether we get a job in New Zealand or Perth where we can use the crane, we'll then just sublease another vessel and exchange them out. So we're actually looking at a very, very active next 6 to 12 months with the business.
You mentioned that you guys are pretty much the only ones doing this sort of business. Is that, do you see that continuing, and therefore the big players come to you guys because there are it's kind of a bit specialised?
In fact, they are, yes. So we've been approached by a number of companies out of the UK and so forth, and even people in Western Australia just saying, can you do this job for us? And then we work out a profit share agreement and so forth. So we're actually already finding we're being approached by a number of international operators. And I guess the key point of difference is we're more integrated and more personalized service and bespoke. So we do a lot of engineering in-house. So we solve. So what happens is whenever there's a problem offshore or a decommissioning project, it takes a certain amount of bespoke engineering. And so this isn't something you buy off the shelf. You need to be, and we've actually invested, and we actually, over the last couple of years have invested in a lot of subsea running tools and installation work over riser equipment and so forth. So we're actually an integrated group where we provide subsea decommissioning projects. We provide the engineering. We provide the logistics support. We provide the warehouse support, provide the storage. And then we also provide the marine operations out in the field. And in fact, we mobilize also contractors where they'll go on someone else's rig and platform. And we're already being in discussion with the major operator in the Gippsland Basin about putting our people on some of their legacy platforms to decommission some of the existing infrastructure there already. And so we make a margin on even our contracting engineers as well.
Where do you see the growth? Because you spoke about your vessel being involved in various projects, et cetera. Where's the biggest growth? Is it in renewables? Is it in the decommissioning? Or is it both? And where do you see the biggest expansion for the company?
Where I see is there's probably an overlap, and it's currently with maintaining supply of natural gas, which is currently under pressure in the Eastern Seaboard, and so we're supporting operators in that regard. At the same time, we've got assets which are maturing, particularly the Gippsland Basin, which is the oldest basin in Australia, is reaching the end of its useful life in many respects. And so there's a massive amount of decommissioning to occur there. And as I said, there's estimated to be $40 billion US dollars to be decommissioned offshore Australia. And I would estimate, and I think it's quite a reasonable estimation, and the company has, about $10 billion of that will be spent in the Gippsland Basin alone. You compare that to our annual turnover of $30 million a year. So there's massive expansion opportunity there. And what we're doing is we're actually decommissioning and rehabilitating the environment such that at the end of the day, the objective is to leave the environment as if you were never there. The third point I'd say, and so we're seeing a staged growth profile, and each of them will overlap to some extent. And then you've got the renewables, and we're at the early stage of the renewables path. But again, that will be the third stage. So we can see a clear path to growth from current to medium to the long term. And it requires all of the skills and assets that we've got, and we're in the right position in the right place. And we're a long way away from our international competitors. And there's not one Australian company that does what we do in an integrated fashion, not one.
Well, that's a great place to be, especially when I'm talking to you from an investor point of view. I love to hear that. What about personnel? Do you get a fairly skilled group of people that you need? Do you need to scale up, people-wise? Because it sounds to me like the growth of Tech Ocean is only just getting started, and that you might have to scale up people-wise as well. Is that going to be a challenge, or do you see that growth being, clearly managed?
Look, it will be a challenge, but it is manageable. And a couple of key points I'd make is that we've currently got about 40 full-time staff, and we were able to supplement ourselves with up to 100 people, including contractors. And we've done that in the past when we've done major decommissioning projects. What I would say is that this is a generalisation, but we've seen in Australia typically that the big companies come in from overseas. They'll do, for instance, they'll build out a big LNG project, right? And most recently, they've been off the Northwest Shelf. But then they start, they go, oh, well, that project's finished. We'll just lay off a whole lot of staff. And so there is this latent capacity of people that are skilled in the industry that are not fully utilised. And so we can see that's a great opportunity, particularly in Victoria, and which is the history of this state, and then in Western Australia, where there is well-trained people that have worked for big companies that are currently underutilised. So we can see actually securing those people to help us support the expansion plans we've got. So we'll be hiring local people and creating jobs and work for people in these areas. And so it's actually, it has a feel-good factor as well.
We like a nice feel-good factor, don't we, Brendan? Yep. I guess, is your focus going to continue to be on Australia, Asia? I mean, you did mention global, but do you think the bulk of the work is going to be done in around Australia? Because it sounds to me it's a lot of work to be done down here.
I think there is, and that's where you play to your strengths. So, you know, but there are some other opportunities that have been presented to us, perhaps in Southeast Asia and potentially even the Middle East, but we're primarily focused in Australia because that's our backyard and that's where we have the strategic advantage, and there is plenty of work to have.
Well, when you mentioned the size of the work, $40 billion going up to $100 billion, and that's B with a, not M, ladies and gentlemen, that is quite massive. Now, we're running out of time, Brendan. I'd like to know, this is how I sign off all of my my interviews. I want three reasons why our beautiful investor audience out there should be looking very closely at ASX code T3K right now.
Right. Firstly, we're a decommissioning expert company, integrated, and we've already delivered on two key projects, and there's a massive market opportunity there over the next 20 years, and we're already tendering for a substantial amount of work in that area, and we expect we're going to be successful with some of those tenders. Secondly, we're servicing the renewables market. We were the only Australian company to be servicing Star of the South. We've been approached by a number of other companies. OceanX is one of them, looking at putting a wind farm offshore New South Wales and a bunch of other sites around Australia. And I guess the third key point is we've got massive expansion opportunities in both the current business that we're servicing in terms of just the gas market, renewables, and also decommissioning. But what I can see is the company at the moment is slightly below its IPO price, and this is a great opportunity then to invest and get set for the huge expansion opportunities we have going forward in terms of growth of the business. We've been profitable for the last 11 years in terms of operating cash flow, and the company's been managed well, and we've got great expansion opportunities going forward.
Well, there you heard it from Brendan Brown, ladies and gentlemen, Chairman and Non-Executive Director of TechOcean, on the cusp of expansion, only just getting started in renewables and in this decommissioning, making the world just a little bit of a better place and hopefully a great share price to come. Brendan Brown, thank you so much for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thank you, Kerry.